and say thank you so much, Alonzo, for giving me a little bit of your time. I'm not going to eat up your whole afternoon.
Wait, I don't get paid? What?
Yeah, we're going to have to work that out. Man. We'll work that out.
This wasn't in the email.
No, it wasn't. No. But thank you so much for just kicking it with us. And normally I have one sheet, like a sheet of questions, which I'm holding in my hand.
All right.
I want to say this up front. Out of all the comedians, you are one of the hardest to write questions for. Because
why?
Here's why. It takes a podcast to know a podcaster. You have a podcast called Who's Paying Attention?
Yeah.
On All Things Comedy, right? So whenever I think of a question, you address it in that week's podcast. So I'm like, oh, damn. All right. So this is the hits. If any of this seems redundant, I apologize.
It's all good. It's all good. Let's see what you got.
But this is what we were saying a little bit off mic. I'm a bit of a fanboy, and I followed your career since, like most people, Last Comic Standing, worked retroactively and then kept up with you since then. And one thing I love is the fact that you're good with topical humor. You're special, Who's Paying Attention? Double entendre, because who was paying attention to what is going on? And a lot of that, it just resonates with me, and as well as your podcast, Who's Paying Attention? You are pretty much hitting on all the topics of that week.
Well, that's my podcast is what strikes me as funny or interesting in the news that week, mm-hmm. right? But what the Who's Paying Attention thing goes back to is the press. See, the press has dropped the ball, right? The press is the fourth estate. The press is who is supposed to keep an eye on the government and corporations and everything else. And they've stopped doing their job. So now comics have to do it. Right? And we, you know, we're the truth tellers. I feel like, what's your comedy about? I've always felt it's about.
Mm-hmm. Is that better?
Yep.
Yeah, we're getting a weird feedback.
Yeah, all right, we're good now.
Okay. But I've always felt it's about the truth. Comedy's mm-hmm. about the truth. So, you know, Who's Paying Attention goes to, well, we are. And we are not afraid to say that you're full of, I don't know, we cussing on.
Oh, yo, you can swear. Yeah. Oh, no, we prefer it, actually.
Yeah, we're not afraid to say you're full of shit. I mean, we have a press now that will not use the word lie. When Trump lies, or any mm-hmm. government person lies, they misspoke, inaccurate, recall. I've heard a bunch of acronyms. I mean, not acronyms, a bunch of just
other words to not say lie.
Yeah, to not call a liar a liar. So.
Now, here's what's interesting about that. And I try to, like, I know that's one of your buttons, Trump. Just this entire administration. I'm curious, how has he made crazy the new normal? Because I'm not shocked by a lot of the crazy stuff that he says, but I know in my heart I should be shocked by.
Yeah, well, that was the fear when he first got elected, right? They said, let's hope that this doesn't become normal. And it has become normal. You know, lately I've been quoting Mark Twain, right? Never argue with a stupid person because they'll drag you down to their level and beat you with experience.
Mm.
And that's what Trump's done. The Trump administration has lowered the conversation to the point of idiocy is considered normal. And the other thing is, we give, and this is society, we give credibility for the wrong reasons. So if you take climate change, for example, you have real scientists mm-hmm. who studied this, who went to school, got a degree, studied climate, have looked at you know, climate change over centuries, decades, et cetera, and they pointed out, you know, polar ice caps shrinking, et cetera, you know, and then you have people who just say, no, it's not true, and they interview both of them like their credibility is the same. Like, no, you don't
exactly
have the same credibility as a scientist just because you have a million followers on Twitter or whatever, you know what I mean?
Right.
They
this person did the work.
Right. So we give credibility to ridiculousness. Yeah, we've allowed Trump and that whole bullshit to become normal. I mean, building the wall, that is an objectively ridiculous statement. We're going to build a wall from California to Florida along the southern border to keep out immigrants. If you just said that to somebody, a normal thinker, but they'd be like, what the hell is wrong with you?
You can't.
Yet now we debate it as if it's a credible idea. So I try not to do, you know, my thing with Trump, I try not to do too much Trump, because in comedy, you could do your whole hour on Trump. You can make your whole thing, like Colbert, his whole thing now is just anti-Trump every night. And you can do that, but it becomes redundant.
Yeah.
And the thing I love about comedy is creativity, so you can't ignore it, because it's what it's there, right? The country's talking about it. But I don't want to make it the only thing I talk about.
That makes sense. And you do jump topics. I know, like, I was going down the list and listen to you on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and listen to stuff like that. And Trump, that just the name, the word, when you say it, will stop everyone. It's like, oh my God, we got to address this. Now, here goes something I would like to address with you, because I've heard your thoughts on this, but I want to hear it in your face for some reason. Before 2 years ago, you are a Clippers fan.
Always. Yeah, I've been a Clipper fan. Well, I shouldn't say always. I've been a Clippers fan since the 80s, back when the Clippers were horrible.
May I ask why? Yeah, that was my follow-up question.
When the Clippers would win 15 games a season. You know why? Because in the 80s, and I loved Showtime and the Lakers. I loved Magic, mm-hmm. Worthy, Kareem. It's, to me, is... I hate the fact they never mention him when they talk about the greatest player in history. They never mention Kareem.
Kareem doesn't
arguably
come up. Yeah.
He should at least be in that argument. But anyway, I love that team. But the Clipper games, you could go to for nothing.
Yeah.
We used to go to Clipper games for $5 or $10, and it'd only be 3,000 people there. So you got to see an NBA game for nothing. The other thing I always loved about the Clippers was they really showed up and they tried. Like, it was like, this is a horrible team. But they're playing. They're doing the best they can. You know.
Okay. All right. All right.
They would always have one superstar, but he was by himself, right? So they'd have like a. We were talking about this morning on another show I did, like Michael Cage, right?
Okay.
Who would lead the league in rebounds? You know, just Jerry Curl juice dripping all over the court, but there was no scorer on the team. There
exactly.
There was no guard, and it was just then you had Danny Manning, who was, you know, great. Power for one of the early all-purpose big men, a mm-hmm. big man who could shoot, who could pass, and everything, had no one to pass the ball to.
And now, how I looked at the Clippers, late 80s, early 90s, until DeAndre Jordan, this is how I looked at the Clippers. You started or ended your career there.
Right.
You wasn't there at your prime.
I wish I could remember who it was. It was a Clipper who got traded, and when he left, he said, I'm so glad to be going to the NBA.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a thing. Elton Brand was he was great, and he carried him to the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. And then he was, like, recruiting to get Baron Davis to come to the team, and then he bailed.
Yeah,
and
he should have.
And left Baron Davis sitting there saying, what the hell? You know, it's but it's fun. It's also there's been a study. There was a great article about it. I'm a Met fan. I grew up with the New York Mets.
Okay.
And there's a ton of comics who are Met fans. You know, Jim Brewer and Kevin James and Seinfeld and all these comics.
They're
and they
lovable
say,
losers.
This is what they say, that comics love lost causes.
Ooh.
That's what they say, that comedians gravitate to lost causes. And it's probably true, because let me tell you, there's a half dozen of us comics who are Clipper season ticket holders who have a ball going to Clipper games.
I would imagine, because you're kind of entertaining yourself at some point in the game. Now, not so much.
Well, it was fun watching them get good. It was exciting. You know, the big three had a great run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Blake Griffin. So
we got him. Yep. Uh-huh.
Let me talk to you about Blake.
Would you like him back?
No.
Okay.
No. Blake Griffin was explosive early in his career.
Yes, he was.
Once his knees have gone, and they're not fully gone, but he can't explode like he used to. He's not a complete player. His jumper is weak. Not a great defender. He, you know, but here, that's on the court. So off the court, I'll tell you, this is what happened. This is my Blake Griffin
okay.
thing. So Blake wants to be a comic.
Yes.
And Blake's friends with a lot of comics I know. Mm-hmm. And they like him, blah, blah, blah. He's funny, very funny for an NBA player. That's okay. how I describe it.
Makes sense.
So we're at a comedy festival in Montreal, Just for Laughs, the biggest comedy festival in the world. And Blake is there, and he's hosting this series of late night shows. And I go, you know, I'm just hanging out. I got friends on the show. So I meet him. It's like, hey, what's up, Blake? Blah, blah, blah. You know, he was there with his brother. I don't know if his brother's a twin or something. They look, but anyway.
Okay.
Talking more to his brother, but anyway. So I just said to Blake, hey, I'm a big Clipper fan. And he turned around and walked away. I mean, dissed me, just literally pivoted and walked away.
Okay.
And I was,
you know, like, that thing he doesn't do on the court.
I was like, man, I was like, man, you better be glad I'm not on this show, because I would destroy you. You don't know who I am, but I would destroy you in my court now, right?
Uh-huh.
But then what bothered me even more, Cristela Alonso, who is a great comic.
Yeah.
I love Cristela, big Clipper fan. He did the same thing to her. And we weren't, listen, I wasn't asking him for his autograph. I didn't want to talk to him about, hey, what goes on in the huddle. I didn't care about his relationship with, you know, DeAndre Jordan or the right. ball boy. Nothing. I don't give, you know, I'm not going to hassle him about that.
Yeah.
I just was letting him know, like, yeah, man, I'm a Clipper fan. That's all. And so that was when I was like, yeah, well, fuck Blake Griffin. You know, and I tossed out my shoes, tossed out my jersey, and I was done with Blake. Because it was fucked up thing
to
do.
I get it, yeah.
You know, and I don't know where it came from or why and whatever. You know, like I say, I know comics who know him. They say he's cool, good, God bless. But no, Blake was not. The other problem with Blake is not a fourth quarter player. Blake was never give me the ball. Like, to be a superstar in the NBA, you have to be give me the ball, I'm going to win the game. Give me the ball. In the fourth quarter, give me the ball. Blake was never that.
Well, that changed, and I'm using air quotes. The reason I say that changed when he came to Detroit, because we didn't have any other options. And for some reason, we are running our entire offense through Blake Griffin, and it hurts.
Well,
it hurts to watch.
He's the best player you have, and like you said, you don't have any other options. But how far did it take you?
First round playoff sweep.
That's his thing.
But, I mean, it sucks that happened. And that is the opposite of what this podcast stands for, where you're like, don't meet your heroes.
Yeah,
I've always heard that.
Yeah, he was, and I'm not even going to say he was a hero. I just like him on the team.
I get you.
I mean, his dunks were, you know, when Lob City was so much fun to watch. Now, you mentioned DeAndre Jordan. Of the big three, he was always my favorite player, and he was the biggest loss to the Clippers.
Oh, yeah. He was the biggest loss because he had more potential. He was just coming into his own.
It's not just potential. He was an old school center. When you have a center who can get 20 rebounds and block shots, that allows everyone else to take risks on defense. See, when you got a big man behind you, then you can go for the ball. You can make the defensive play, or you can run out on a fast break because you know he got your back.
Exactly.
See, he can score, but he wasn't looking to score, and he wasn't a first option. It's actually great to have a center like that, especially when you had a point guard like CP3, you know. So, yeah, so losing DeAndre, that they haven't been able to fill that hole.
Now, the one thing out of this whole Clippers breakup that I feel okay about is my hypothesis was proven correct. I said if you get Austin Rivers away from his dad, he's going to show up on whatever team he's at. And I'm seeing spurts of that happen. It's like his dad was playing him safe.
I don't know why people hate on Austin.
I don't. I just think
when Austin was when Austin was on the Clippers, Austin was a great backup point guard.
Yes, he was.
He got overpaid. That might have had to do with his dad, but the series against Portland, when he got his nose bloodied and stayed in the game. See, Austin was learning from Chris Paul, and he developed that toughness. I've always liked Austin Rivers. I think he's a baller.
I never said he wasn't tough. I just said
him to a, you know, he left and he made it to Houston, and he found a good spot
exactly
in Houston. But you know something? He's behind Chris Paul again. So maybe that has something to do with it. But no, I don't think, you know, people hung the dad thing on him. No, he's legitimately in the NBA. He he'd be an NBA player without his dad. You know, you want to talk about dads, Luke Walton? Are you kidding? Is there anyone more overrated, more lucky than Luke Walton?
Now, you Lonzo Ball in 3 years.
You talk about dad hooking you up and getting by on a name.
Luke Walton is, however you want to put it, just not NBA material.
No, Luke Walton.
He's great in college.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's just right. Where the resume should end.
Yeah, it was his, you know, if his dad wasn't Bill Walton, who also was overrated, but if his dad was
on the championship team, yeah.
Yeah, but the Boston championship, his dad was waving a towel. You know,
okay.
He didn't play. He played in Portland, but he didn't play in Boston. But anyway, you know, but also, you know, something, man, that's how life is. You know?
Yeah.
That life is like that sometimes, right? If my dad had been a famous director, I wouldn't be talking to you right now.
Damn.
I'd be making a movie somewhere. I wouldn't be wasting my time with you.
But what I'm getting at is, wow. I'm just going to keep going up.
Listen, if your dad was a famous announcer, you wouldn't be talking to me right now.
Knowing who my dad is, he would be like, no, work the ground. Come from the ground up. I'd probably get a couple of little gimmies along the way, but that's about it. But, like, when we talked about meeting your heroes, loosely with the term Blake, you got a chance to do that not too long ago with Don Rickles before he passed.
Oh, I've met so many heroes and legends, not just in comedy, in numerous things. I love meeting the old masters of comedy. Having Rickles make fun of me backstage will always be one of the highlights of my career. When Don Rickles cracks on you, and you can look it up on YouTube, folks.
Mm-hmm.
But when Don Rickles makes fun of you, that's like, wow, it's an honor. But, you know, I met Carl Reiner. I met Phyllis Diller. I met Phyllis Diller a few times. That was awesome. People don't realize what a big deal Phyllis Diller was until you go to the Friars Club and you see where everyone has a plaque and Phyllis has a wall.
Oh.
Because there were no women when she was doing it.
It was
her. Even Joan Rivers came along after her. You know, she was a big deal. Who else? You know, I've met Franklin Ajay. That's a name you don't hear enough, doesn't get enough respect. Brilliant, brilliant comic. When I met him and he knew who I was, mm-hmm. I was honored. I got to open for Carlin once. That was amazing, just to get to talk to him a little bit. And, you know, so I've met, and then younger, more legendary people, whether it be, you know, George Wallace or the big superstars, like Dave Chappelle is the nicest guy in the world, cool as hell, and, you know, Chris Rock, Louis Black, you know, stuff like that. But then in the music world, I'm a huge jazz fan, huge, I love jazz.
Okay.
And I'm friends with Marcus Miller. That to me,
awesome.
That's ridiculous. Just the idea. I'm friends with Marcus Miller. I knew George Duke before he passed away. I met Quincy Jones. You know, and on and on. So yeah. So one of the perks of this business is getting to meet legends from other art forms,
mm-hmm.
and talk to them. And sports. You know, like I said. You know, Worthy and, you know, numerous athletes, because I've done these charity golf tournaments and stuff like that, you know, from Ed Tuttle Jones to Joe Montana to Dwight Hicks to, you know, me and Jerry Rice have the same size hand.
Okay.
Okay, I got to do a pic, because people always talk about how big my hands are, and we held our hands up. So things like that, it's little things, it's just moments. But it's really fun and funny because it's something you would never expect.
Well, I mean, and that's how it's supposed to be. Like, you get a chance to meet a person. Like, you had a bad experience with Blake. But that's how it's supposed to be, because you kind of sort of absorb their knowledge. And maybe when you get a chance, you can pass that on to the younger generation.
Absolutely,
but you talked about jazz. I want to touch on this for a second.
All right.
Okay. I know you're a jazz head, and somehow now you're doing a lot of jazz shows, you're doing cruises and stuff. Can I ask one question? I like to ask anyone in jazz about this. How do you save it? Like, I watched a documentary called La La Land.
You don't.
Of two white kids saving jazz.
No, that I know. That was ridiculous. Here's the thing. You don't have to save jazz.
Uh-huh.
They've been trying to save jazz since the 50s.
Okay.
Jazz is going to be here because jazz artists are creating and doing new things. Here's the thing about jazz is it's a wider spectrum than people think, right? So when people think jazz, they think older traditional jazz. They think Miles Davis and Coltrane and stuff like that. And then you have the Wynton Marsalis thing, right, with the jazz orchestra. And some people will think of like Herbie Hancock and Chick Corea, people like that, right? And they're all legendary and they're great and I love what they do. But there are people now, like there's a cat named Robert Glasper. I always refer
so
to Glasper.
So good.
But not only is Glasper brilliant, the bands he puts together. So he has a guy named Terrace Martin, right? They have a band called R plus R equal now. Terrace Martin. What people don't realize is Terrace Martin is doing the music for Kendrick Lamar. See? So jazz, it has expanded. Well, it's always expanding, but the artists and the musicians in jazz are playing things that, you know, unfortunately, like it doesn't get any radio airplay or whatever. The jazz artists love jazz. Jazz is going to survive because they're going to keep playing jazz. Now, they might jump over and make $1 million doing a record somewhere else, right?
Got it.
Marcus Miller did a ton of music with Luther Vandross. Brilliant music. People don't know that. They don't know that. They don't know that he was the MD, that he was, you know. But at the same time, he was making records with Miles Davis and his own records and stuff like that. So he was able to fuel this brilliant jazz career while doing R&B music, you know.
So it's sort of like, I'm doing this to pay the bills, listen, but this is my real passion.
They're all his passion because he loves all kind of music. Quincy Jones. Look at Quincy Jones. Quincy Jones did Thriller.
Yeah.
But Quincy Jones was still making jazz records, brilliant jazz records at the same time. You know what I mean? So would it be great if more people listened to jazz, if it were more popular? Yes, it would be fantastic. But will jazz survive? Jazz will survive because jazz artists are creative and they love the music. They have such a passion for the music that they're going to keep it alive. So if you're listening to this podcast, listen to Christian Scott. Listen to Derek Hodge. Listen to Robert Glasper. Listen to any of these guys. I call them, they're like young lions of jazz. These guys who are, say, under 40 and taking jazz to new places because they're, like, the infusion of hip-hop into jazz, you know, two violins and so on. These jazz artists are bringing hip-hop into jazz in such creative ways that the music is phenomenal. And you'd be surprised how many beats and hooks you've listened to that were created by a jazz musician.
Now, just kind of piggyback off that a little bit. We had Pieces of the Dream on the podcast not too long ago, and they went the other way. It's not necessarily that they went in more of a hip-hop world, and they brought it back with them, and more people, and it's sort of like an infusion. Some hip-hop artists go that way into jazz, and then the jazz guys goes into hip-hop, and it's like one big circle. And they trade in and trade out. And when I say hip-hop, I want to put in R&B, and I want to put in...
Yeah, well, a lot of them, you know, a lot of jazz artists, and if you talk to them, they're like, well, it's music.
Yep.
It's all music.
And that's the first thing you said. Do they got chops?
They want to play music, and can you play? You know, here's a great thing about jazz. We're in a point in our society, like, where we're going backwards at an incredible speed, right? Racism that never went away is now much more public. I mean, they're taking away voting rights, for God's sake. And, you know, now the abortion thing, right? Mm-hmm. So this underlying hatred that these guys have of women and wanting to control women and their bodies and so on. One of the great things about jazz was before there was a word of integration, jazz bands were integrated. You know why? Because the question was, can you play? Can you play? One of my favorite lines I ever heard from Marcus. He was listening to something. He said, man, that dude's swinging like a rusty gate. And that's some jazz shit right there.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
That just means you can't play for shit. It don't matter if you black, white, Latino, Jewish, whatever. Can he play? Is he shit? Is he swinging? Can he play? Is he tight? That's all that mattered was the music. So when you talk about, yeah, when they go to hip hop and this and that, it's the same thing. You know, it is this artist talented, right? Kendrick Lamar is super talented. It's yeah, his thing is hip hop and rap. But if Kendrick Lamar had to go into a different area of music, he would still be super talented.
Makes
right?
Sense.
Just like
yeah.
Just like Glasper has the jazz trio and the experience, which is like an electric R&B funk thing, mm-hmm. you know. And again, so many others, and that's what happens, man. It's all music.
All right. I don't want
to coming from a comic who don't know shit about music other than how to play CDs.
Do you
CDs,
listen?
CDs, kids, look for them. It's history, I know, but I'm older than you. Which gets back to the other thing you were saying about passing it on to the next generation. I love being one of the old guys now.
Yeah.
Young comics come to me. This is when I knew I was an old guy. This happened about 5-6 years ago. When I say old, I mean old veteran. They
gotcha.
Started asking me shit that I remember asking George Wallace.
Which was?
Just about comedy, about working, about being professional, about gigs, you know, whatever. Just questions comics have as they're coming up. They would ask me stuff, and I remember asking him.
Okay.
And that's when you say, oh, I guess now I'm the veteran. You know, and I love George. George is still a friend of mine and still a mentor, you know. But, yeah, I'm happy to pass it on.
That's awesome. And just to kind of, like, just to close it out, because I could sit here all afternoon and chop it up with you, but that is completely unfair to you.
No, it's okay, man. I could talk comedy
but
all day.
Would you, I guess, young guy in comedy coming up, what would you tell him or her?
You know what I would tell him or her that I didn't learn is marketing. You got to sell yourself. You know, a few years ago, I heard a guy at a seminar, and this is one of those things, you know how they say you don't hear it until you hear it? Mm-hmm. I know I heard this before, but when he said it, I really heard it. No one's responsible for making you famous. Okay? So you have to market yourself. You have to sell yourself. Keep writing. Keep performing. Do your comedy. But also get involved with social media and everything else. Push your name out there. Talk about how good you are. Like, I never learned that. I thought that the business was going to make me famous. I thought, be a great comic and you'll get famous. And I've had a good career. I'm not saying that, you know, it's been a great run and it ain't over yet. But push yourself out there. Sell yourself. Marketing is a big part of your job. So to the young comics, I say this to them all the time. That's one piece of advice I give them. The other thing I say is become part of a crew. Get some comic friends that you hang out with and you work with and write with regularly. And then when one of you makes it, he or she pulls the other ones up with them. And you see that in things like Amy Schumer. You know, how many mm-hmm. people has Amy Schumer pulled up since she's become a big deal? Kevin Hart. You know, Kevin Hart employs and opens doors for a lot of young comics and so on. So, yeah, get into, be a part of something. Tiffany's doing it now. Tiffany
okay.
Haddish
yeah.
is doing it now, you know, bringing up some of her girls that she's worked with over the years and she's friends with and so on. Be a part of something and grow it and watch it grow and grow together. So that's the advice I give young comics. I was much more independent doing my own thing because I watched guys from the 80s and that's kind of how they did it. And that model doesn't work anymore.
Okay. Well, Lonzo, I want to say thank you so much.
Thank you.
You are the hardest interview to prepare for, but you are the easiest interview because you just a beacon of knowledge. You have all of this.
Thanks.
This is the first time on the podcast, but it ain't going to be the last time.
No, hit me up whenever I'm in the D.
Oh, man. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.